Welcome back. It's Locked On NFL Draft on a midweek special. We're going to get into how we got here. Eric's philosophy on players, my philosophy on how you go about setting up a board. Like, we're going to cover it all. We'll probably get into a couple arguments, but it's going to be fun. This is going to be a great one. Thanks for making us your first listen, and welcome to Locked On NFL Draft.
You are Locked On NFL Draft. Your daily podcast covering the NFL Draft. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Locked On NFL Draft. I'm your host, former NFL and NFL defensive back, Eric Crocker. And of course, I'm joined by my guy, Ryan Tracy, and today, man, we're going to get into some of our philosophies on evaluating prospects, how we rank them, all that good stuff. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm feeling good. This is going to be fun because we've known each other for a little bit, but not like going back years and years and years, right? So I think this is a good chance to get like background and cover like why we think the way we think. I'm really excited about this one.
Right. So, you know, obviously most of you guys haven't really got the chance to, you know, kind of really learn who I am, things like that, especially if you don't follow me on Twitter at Eric_Crocker. But I've kind of worked my way up just talking about football, talking about defensive backs and receivers specifically. And that has just grown and grown and grown and exploded. And it's opened me up to just like, you know, a lot of different things that have kind of really come my way, whether it's with draft, being on different shows, being on cool shows, having cool guys follow me like Greg Cosell. I remember being excited, like, wait a minute, is Greg Cosell following me? What the heck? So, a lot of my philosophy, especially for wide receivers and defensive backs, like how it kind of started for me was I played the position, right? So I played cornerback. I was a 6'2", 200-pound corner. And I understood what my limitations were as somebody that was like a 4.55 guy. So when I started talking about defensive backs and kind of evaluating them, I was able to use myself as a baseline, what I struggled with, what I wasn't good with, what I wish I was able to do, you know, how, you know, a bigger guy, things that he struggles with, a smaller guy, you know, things that they might have an advantage with. And I used myself as a baseline. And then I also used that with what it was like to go up against certain type of receivers. So, you know, how it was for a bigger guy to go up against smaller receivers, or a smaller corner to go up against a smaller receiver, vice versa, a big corner going up against a big receiver, what makes a big receiver special. And I started kind of like coming up with my own philosophy on how to do it. And I don't know how, but my evaluations on guys were typically spot on. Now, sometimes the thing that's hard to predict, and you can attest to this too, is how something might translate to the NFL that you think might be an issue based on maybe the history of that, or, you know, and things like that. But for the most part, that was kind of how I came up with my philosophy on how I'm evaluating those talent. And then obviously, I did the scouting academy, had to start improving and learning the different positions, but receivers and defensive backs where I really made my niche, that was kind of how I did it, using myself as a baseline and guys I played with and freaks like Antonio Cromartie, but also looking at Darrell Revis and how he did things in two totally different styles, but it worked for them. And then how they talked about going up against certain receivers.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of people start that because I use my personal experience too. It's just that my talent ran out like early in college, right? Like I hit my wall. It's one of those deals that I come from coaching because I went and I did a GA. So I did that for a couple of years. I became a performance coach. You know, it's funny. People look at this and they probably don't realize that you're about 2 inches taller than me. And I'm probably about 100 pounds heavier than you. And so like I come from playing outside linebacker, from playing fullback in college and that kind of thing. And one of those things where I was not good. I shouldn't have done that. You know, I was a good wrestler, should have stayed at that, right? But wanted to play ball and it didn't work out. So when I switched over, I ended up coaching a number of guys that got to league in all kinds of different positions. And that challenged me. And so as a GA, you get to train everyone when you're in strength conditioning. And then when you try to specialize your position, that changes things. So I had guys anywhere. And I was at Kansas before the Tlaib days, before Chris Harris, you know, like the Stubblefield years. So I'm a little older too. So yeah. I got some references. I ended up getting, you know, like 15, 16 of my guys played in the league. And so I've got a lot of different perspectives on different organizations and different positional needs and that kind of thing. And that all brought me back down to as a performance coach, how to get back into this, how to measure things, how to adjust things. That's where I come from. And that's what's intriguing to me is I see little bits and pieces from the staffs that I've been on and the guys that I know, scouts in the league that I know and that kind of thing, but like not my personal experience, right? So I have to pick and put it all together. And that's why I probably cast my net a lot wider than say somebody that is based in the film from the scouting genre and that kind of thing. And so I try to roll it all in together and listen to guys like you that actually have experience.
You know, that's the tough thing, right? Like there has been this battle of the film guy versus the analytical guy. And I've gotten kind of caught up in that web as well, but I've learned that, you know, you kind of need both of them. And someone like me that came up playing the game, I never looked at things from an analytical standpoint. And I'm, you know, a lot of times I get into it with people, I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, what does this even mean? But I think a lot of it has a really good place in sports and the NFL. I think that's something that's become much bigger. How did you get into the analytical aspect of your, you know, film studying and your evaluations?
Yeah, you know, for me, it comes back to when I was just a GA. You know, I was meeting guys that now run the combine and things like that, right? And back then, pro days were it. If you wanted to get in the league and you hadn't had like ace film, you weren't super highly touted, you had to go show out there. And it's funny because the more I talked to scouts, the more I got into, hey, he had this kind of production, this kind of average, like for a receiver, what his average receptions were. Can he run this? Can he change direction in this kind of time? And so it really showed me that even though like there's this argument out here in the Twitterverse, the non-league scouting community wants to argue back and forth, scouts have always used numbers. They always rely on numbers. So it's just a different way to apply it. And honestly, I think when you're in it, you're a little close to it. So if you can take a step back and see what the results are in a numerical kind of thing, I think it helps give a little bit of clarity. It's not a fight. It's two views of the same kind of thing happening. I think you need both angles.
Right. And it's kind of just a different way to come to somewhat of the same conclusion. Do you think that, or have you been a part of any organizations or seen organizations that you think might lean on analytics a little bit more than others? There have been some coaches that have come out recently, the coach for the Chargers, where he talked about using analytics and the data and not saying it's a end all be all, but they use it. And he talked about sacks, right, versus pressures. And their analytical approach to it has told them that it's more effective to have someone that gets a lot of pressures as opposed to someone that gets sacks, because the sacks are less consistent in play-to-play production. So are those things that you kind of take into account as well, even when like kind of watching film?
Oh, absolutely. Because I'll tell you, I verify whether I think something's a pressure or not, especially when we're talking pass rushers. And like we talked last week, I separate that. How much pressure do you get? And then what's your finish rate? Because like you said, it's way more consistent to get pressure, but then how much are you making those pressures into completions on the sacks? Like that's a different metric for me, because I want to know that kind of thing. And that's really where it comes from, because you can watch film and understand how a play happened. But then if you try to piece it together, I mean, a normal scouting process, you watch what, 3-5 games? Yeah. Maybe you get to 7. So you got to try to like X's and O's, take in consideration the matchup, the maturation of the player. Like, you know, you look at his sophomore film and did he make a huge leap? How do you know? And so I like to compare all of those things. And there's a lot more detail. We're going to get into the thick of it here, folks. I think we should probably do that after this.
Hey, Locked On NFL Draft fans, this is your host, Eric Crocker, and I'm here with an incredible app that everyone who buys gas needs to know about. It's called GetUpside, and my listeners right now are making up to 25 cents every gallon of gas every time they fill up. What are you going to do? You just need to go and download GetUpside app, and it's in your Apple App Store. It's in your Google Play Store right now, and when you download the app, use promo code Touchdown. That's going to get you an extra 25 cents off per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents cash back. All right. So don't pay full price for gas at a pump ever again, especially right now with the outrageous gas prices. All right. Get cash back by using GetUpside. And again, just download the app, use promo code Touchdown, and they're going to get you up to what, 50 cents a gallon cash back on your first full tank. So some people who drive a lot, I don't drive as much. I live in a small town, but the people who are driving and they're commuting, they're making up to $200-$300 back a month. And it's really easy to cash out. You can do it at any time using your bank account, PayPal, or e-gift cards, Amazon cards, whatever it is that you do. But again, just download the app, GetUpside, and use the promo code Touchdown to get that 50 cents a gallon cash back on your first tank. All right. Again, that's promo code touchdown. All right, Ryan, we're back, and we want to start to kind of get into breaking down some of these positions. And I want to start with the quarterback, because that's something that's kind of changing, and it's I'm looking at it different. I used to be a guy that, it's crazy, you know, I didn't want the athletic quarterback. Mm-hmm. I just want a guy that's going to stand in the pocket and play within the context of the offense, right? Like, if I call a play and it's designed to go here, I want you to see that and go there before bailing on the play. But now the league is kind of going towards more playmakers, and maybe they aren't running it to a T exactly how a coach would want it. How do you evaluate that style of quarterback as opposed to a more traditional quarterback that we've seen in recent years?
It's funny. I talked with a friend of mine that coaches on the West Coast, and as the conversation progressed, we kind of boiled it down to this. Like, it's the difference between Uber and FedEx. Like, you used to want a guy that would stand in the pocket and deliver the ball to the right spot at the right time so that his playmaker can play, make the play, right? Now it's like, you're going to call up and say, just, I don't care how you get it here. Take whatever route you want, whatever works for you, right? Ad lib. And that seems to be what it is now. And the advantage for that is, I think what you saw in years past is the mobile quarterback was somebody that, when things broke down, could take advantage of it. Now it's more of a weapon, the RPO game, like utilizing it as part of the game plan. I also think that that helps, I think, maybe in preparation and simplification, because I used to ding guys and give them a minus on preparation when they had to do the check with me and look at the sideline and all that. Yeah. I still do that. I got to tell you guys, like, just know that it's in there. But I think that that's becoming less of a thing when you know that you have the RPO decision built in there and he doesn't have to check with somebody on the sideline.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting. How has that affected you from an evaluation standpoint, from an analytical standpoint? Like, if do you see some things that might be a little bit more consistent with one style of quarterback as opposed to the other, and how that may translate to the NFL? Or do you just chalk it up as, at the end of the day, this guy wins this way, this guy wins this way, it's going to just be on what a staff's preference is and what they're looking for in their quarterback?
I kind of roll with the punches. I like to look at total yards too. Like, when you look at Lamar's game from college, like, how much is he getting with his legs? How much is he throwing to the air? But overall, what is he doing from scrimmage? It's an old metric that nobody really talks about anymore. Back in the day, it was scrimmage yards that was the number one thing, right? And you can kind of go back to that, but it is very much dependent on how the staff's going to utilize somebody. And are they going to set him up for success being the athlete? Are they going to roll him out, even if it's just to deliver the ball and not necessarily to gain yards? But will the staff work with them? I think there are definite fits around the league that are better than others.
I think one thing that I struggle when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks, and I struggle with this, it's been a couple years now, the lack of NFL throws, right? Like, everything is just, you line up. Most defenses are just playing cover four unless you're watching the SEC, which I love evaluating the SEC, because if you want to know what a guy is, you know, just what he is, and like, take a lot of the guessing out, go watch some receivers or DBs or offensive linemen, defensive linemen from the SEC, because I think they face more pro-style offenses and concepts. And I mean, the guys, just, they're going to play man. They're not just going to go sit in some off coverage, cover four all game like you see over in the Pac-12 or the Big 12. They get after it and they really challenge each other. So, I mean, that's one thing that I really look for with the quarterbacks. You know, can they make those tight window throws? You know, can they, you know, what type of throws are they making down the field? Or is everything just a defined read that's just easy for them because they're playing in this spread offense? And, you know, that has made it a little difficult for me to kind of really evaluate guys. So now, and this was why I was high on Patrick Mahomes, I just go more on upside. Like, I have to throw a lot of the things that I believed made guys good. I have to throw a lot of that out the window. And now it's just, okay, what type of throws can he make? You know, what type of playmaking ability does he have? Is he a high-end playmaking guy? Is he not? Looked at a guy like Mac Jones. Okay, maybe he's not the pure playmaker, but he's so good with his movements in the pocket, and more times than not, he's going to make the right reads and the right throws. But, his arm isn't big enough, but it's like he does a lot of things well enough. But as far as like a Patrick Mahomes, it was like special, 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 special. It just saw all these different special things. And I don't care that he comes from this air raid Texas Tech offense, and a lot of people worried about that. He's a playmaker. He has all the upside. He has all the ability. And I thought that, you know, at the very least, I'm willing to take a chance on that at the NFL. But I'm curious to know if NFL teams are seeing it that way as well, where it's just like, you know what, high-end talent, I just want to take a chance on it.
I have a theory. I can't prove this. I've spoken with several front offices around the league. With Rogue Analytics, we try to offer our services to as many teams as we possibly can. That's generally our outfit. But if you look at some of the younger GMs, I think we see the evolution, right? Look at Mahomes and look at Josh Allen, and who are the GMs that are bringing them in? What are they looking for in terms of overall play, right? One of the big things about Josh, and one of the reasons I digged him in my evaluation of him, is one of the things that I look for is I don't care how or where you're throwing from, what your platform is, but I need to know how often you can complete those passes. Whether you choose to do it from the pocket or outside doesn't matter to me, but I need completion percentage. I need you to put in a place where your guys can take advantage of that ball. And so that's one of the things that I track a lot. I don't necessarily track a whole tree in terms of the NFL quote unquote throws, but I do want to know that. And I do want to know situationally, how do you react to game pressure? You know, guys that win games in the final drives, that gets a plus on my evaluation. You know, I don't let that stuff slide, but I'm not like, does he have his back foot hitting on time? Is he coming out with the right power? Mm-hmm. Is his hips moving enough? I'm not a quarterback guru. I can't evaluate that well enough to make that like the heart of my evaluation. So I want to see production above all.
All right. When it comes to like the running back position, all right, we'll kind of end this segment on that. But when you look at running backs, this is a difficult one because obviously this is being really devalued in the NFL. But when you're just evaluating a guy and maybe putting together your rankings, what's one thing that you're really looking for from your backs? I hear a lot of different things, whether it's contact balance, things like that. I know me, I like a guy who's able to, what I try to call, I need to come up with like a more legit term for it, but who can make a move on top of a move. So a guy like Derrick Henry probably isn't typically my favorite type right. of back, where I like more of a DeAndre Swift, you know, when he's coming out of Georgia. Is there something that you look for, you know, in these running backs coming out?
Yeah, and running back is one of those ones that I probably watch more film in terms of like percentage of what goes into the evaluation than others, because I want to see how he goes about his job. We have to be honest. A lot of a running back's life is based on the line that's blocking for him. So you have to take that into consideration. I think that's one of the reasons it's being devalued. But for me, move on move is nice. I like that as well. For me, it's the number one thing is vision. Can you see where you have to go, especially with the zone reads where you maybe get one read and you have to go and make something out of it? And do you have the lateral agility to make people miss when you make that decision? And are you correct at that? So those are two things that I look for a lot. But honestly, more and more, last 4 or 5 years, my evaluation has become more about how are you as a pass catcher versus can you get to the second level no matter what scheme you're running in.
Right, that makes sense. And I know we wanted to touch a little bit on receivers, but we'll get to them next time. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the defensive line, how we view them, compare some guys, Josh Allen, Nick Bosa, and also get to some of these secondary guys. All right, so cool. Stay tuned. And if you guys haven't already, make sure you guys, you know, try a Built Bar. If you haven't, you're missing out. They say it's a protein bar, but it doesn't really taste like one. It really tastes more like a candy bar. And it's amazing. It's an amazing experience to get it. And, I mean, most protein bars, they're chalky, they're waxy, and they're really just hard to eat. But the Built Bar, it's soft. It's covered in 100% real chocolate. And when you bite into it, man, you just know you're biting into something different that's very enjoyable. All right, Built Bars are very low in carbs, low in calorie, low fat, low sugar, and high in protein. So you're getting all the healthy benefits of something that tastes really good. And that's just not even the best part. The best part is all the flavors that they have. And my wife, she loves the salted caramel. I love the salted caramel. They have the cherry barcia that my daughter likes. They have the mint brownie that my little brother likes. So all these different flavors for you guys to try out. And this month, they have all new flavors that are coming out every 3 to 4 days. So how do you do it? You're going to check back to the website early and often so you don't miss out on any of this. You go to built.com, use promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off of your order. All right, again, use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. Yes, sir. They're right there. Let's go.
I can't decide. I keep too many of them around.
Yeah, and I can't decide what kind of edge rushers do I like. All right. Now, Cleveland Farrell was somebody that was drafted really high. And he was like this high motor guy, and it's like supposed to be like low, you know, or high floor, maybe not the highest of ceilings though. But then also in that class, you had a Nick Bosa, you had Josh Allen. How did you kind of view those guys coming out, and what did you like from one guy more than the other?
I will put it this way. I like the team that took Farrell. I thought they took him in a spot that I expected them to. I just didn't expect them to take him high. I had him at the bottom of the first round. I thought the Raiders might look at him from with their last pick of the first round, not the first one. But I had him in the first, at the very bottom of it, in that that last like four spot range, right? Interesting enough, I actually had more than one D tackle ahead of him in terms of like elevation on the board in Quinnen Williams, obviously, Ed Oliver, and Christian Wilkins I had above him as well. So like I thought the tackle class was pretty good as well. I had him as edge four, and I don't generally make an ambiguation between 3-4 outside linebacker and 4-3 D end. They got to play in hybrids all the time now. So you got to pick your flavor, but you got to put them together in terms of evaluating them. In my opinion, do you see a difference between the two types?
Not as much anymore. It seems like guys are more versatile with their playing. I think Brian Burns is a guy that you would have expected to be like a 3-4 outside linebacker, but I don't know if I saw that from Carolina. It seems like he had his hand in dirt a lot. He's not somebody that I just see dropping into coverage a lot. You know, it was Josh Allen who was the guy where I was like, is he going to struggle being an every down guy with his hand in the dirt? Because, you know, well, I'm watching him. It's like not great versus the run, but you know he's this athletic freak. You know he can bend the quarter. You know the type of athleticism he has, and he has the height, weight, speed. So how did he check out from an analytical aspect? How did Josh Allen check out for you?
Josh Allen was DE1 in the athletic matrix. He had the most athleticism there. Brian Burns was right behind him. Nick Bosa was my DE1, though, even despite that, because the NFL wants to rush four. You can do what you do in college, and you can show us that. At the end of the day, they want to rush four, and that means you got to be a down end, in my opinion. So I put Bosa first. I had Allen number two, about 10 picks behind in the mid-teens, and I had Burns literally right behind him at 17. I had him. So where did you put Burns up against the rest of the top four?
So I went on Twitter and I put together just these clips of me just watching. I try to find like the best team that they played against and just take like a half or like a quarter and just really just go through and just be really consistent with like, what are they doing? And I noticed the consistency came from Nick Bosa. He was just really just destroying this right tackle. And it was against Michigan. And it seemed like he won every which way, whether it was, you know, just beating them off the line with his hands. If it was a bull rush, if it was a run play, he was throwing a guy to the side, making a tackle in the backfield. He was so active in just this limited time of watching him. I'm like, man, this guy is extremely disruptive early and often. And I felt like he'd fit in a lot of different type of defenses. Now, he wasn't just the athletic freak, right? He's a guy that ran like in the 4.8s and things, but he was explosive off the ball. He had strong hands and he was able to move guys. You know, when I watched Brian Burns, he was actually my edge too.
Yeah.
Because he, I thought, had all the athleticism, but he just had like just freakish moves. Like his pass rush moves was there. He was well polished with that. It wasn't just, I have to bend the corner with speed every time. It was like, no, like I can use speed. I can use some speed to power. But I also can use these moves. And then when I saw him against Clemson, I believe it was, he took away the option, like the handoff. It was a read option play. It was a read option on the goal line. He took away the option with the back and the quarterback and made the tackle in the backfield. And I was like, okay, this guy, he's doing some freakish stuff. He's doing different. He had a nice spin move. He showed all, and then he had the length and all these things. I'm like, he's going to be a terrific pass rusher in the NFL. Now, again, that's not to say that Josh Allen wasn't. Josh Allen has been really good, been a really good guy in the NFL. But I just like those other guys better. And I think with all those guys right now, as long as they're healthy or on the field, I think you're fine with any of them. When it comes to – go ahead.
I was going to say, are you surprised at who's been healthy and who hasn't?
I feel like they've all kind of been banged up at one time or another.
Right. It feels like Bosa has been – and maybe I'm wrong. I'd have to check the number of games played in the league, but it feels like it's not as much as I expected from him.
He missed. Well, he got hurt. He played every game, I believe, as a rookie. He did have his ankle wrapped up, but he played every game. And obviously, he won Defensive Rookie of the Year, so he had a good year.
Right.
But his second year, he got hurt week two against the Jets. Missed that whole year. And then so far this year, he hasn't missed a game. So aside from the torn ACL, which...
that'll do it, right?
That's big. He's been healthy aside from that. When I look at the secondary, right, and we'll kind of end on this, but how do you view the safety position? Because we could talk about corners and all that, but safeties. That's something, a position that's changing. And I feel like guys have to be a little bit more hybrid. They have to be able to almost cover like a corner, but still come downhill like your traditional safety. How do you view these guys from an analytical standpoint? And have you seen any shift in what maybe scouts are preferring?
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of shift. And it's one of the ones that it really has me puzzled a lot of times. You're right. I agree with you. Like the versatility part. And I see more of like, they want them either free or they want to drop them all the way down in the nickel. Right. That's a long way to go. I still am someone, because of what I think it does for the rest of the defense, I still want to invest in a true free safety, high center fielder that can get to the edges and take away the passes in the slots along the sidelines, you know. But those guys are rare these days. They're harder to find. And if they are, they're harder to keep healthy too. So for me, I've kind of like dumbed it down to this point where I don't really see strong safeties anymore. Because when you look at guys like JOK last year, I mean, they're lining them up as linebackers. And what used to be a strong safety is now really an LB and lined up inside the box half the time. So for me, it's, can you be like a robber nickel or can you play high? And those are the two things that I'm looking for.
Yeah, and I think if I were to say like my prototypical kind of ideal safety, and there are some guys that really come out that are tremendous, right? We talk about just in this class, you got Kyle Hamilton coming out. In recent years, you had Minkah Fitzpatrick, Derwin James. Those guys were freaks. Another guy that I really liked, that I was really high on, Juan Thornhill. Mm-hmm. And he was a guy who I just thought showed so much versatility, but you talked about some of these guys kind of being banged up, having injuries. I know Thornhill has dealt with that, but he was a guy who I felt like he covered like a cornerback. He had showed so much range. He was a playmaker. He had like 6 interceptions. I want to say he had like 13 interceptions in 2 years, yeah, or 3 years, excuse me, at Virginia, which is terrific. Just show all this versatility. I'm pretty sure you looked into him. How was he when you kind of took his film and then kind of compared that to the analytical side of things? How did he check out for you? I know his athleticism was kind of off the charts as well.
Yeah, he was safety one in the athletic matrix. And that was a tough one for me because I saw some lapses and I had a hard time seeing like, where am I going to put him? Because of that, he could play nickel or he could play corner, or he could play free safety. And I liked him better as a safety. I think he's grown into that role. He had a serious injury at the tail end, the last game of the regular season as a rookie. And that has set him back. I do expect him to continue to go forward. And I had him just below Darnell Savage, who we saw them, the two of them play the other night. And I missed on this one because I had Nasir Adderley above both of them by a slight margin. I had Savage and Thornhill at the top of the second. I had Adderley at the bottom of the first. And I don't think that it's panned out. And I was trying not to put athleticism over stature because Nasir came out real small, right? Real thin. And I was trying not to overreact to that. In the end, I should have just gone with my gut, to tell you the truth.
And what was your gut? That he was the best?
That Nasir was probably smaller than I really wanted to make a big impact, and I should have gone with the bigger body and put Thornhill up top.
Yeah, that was my guy. Man, we're going to get to more of this conversation, and I was upset that the Chiefs got him. We'll talk about that and much more. Tomorrow we got Rob Ring joining us, so you know, obviously we'll talk about an article that he has coming out. We'll preview Thursday Night Football and much, much more, all right? So you guys, keep it locked right here, and thanks for making this your first listen of the day. Your second and third listens, you got Locked On 49ers with myself and Brian Peacock. You got Locked On Chiefs with my guy Ryan Tracy. All right, so till next time, we'll see y'all. Peace.